Hello and welcome to another episode of the Manchester United podcast. I'm Helen Evans.
And I'm David May.
He is, and I'm Sam Homewood.
We did it again, guys. Nice, nice.
I don't know if I like it.
Oh, too cliche now.
Yeah, it feels a bit like, I don't know. It's not the vibe I think we give off.
Well, you're a Simon anyway, so.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. You're a Simon, Sam.
Guys, the sun is shining on Old Trafford. It looks very beautiful. Everything feels a little bit more positive this week. Maisie's played golf.
Yes.
A little bit of sunburn, I might add.
Quite a lot of sunburn.
It's quite a lot, yeah.
Forgot your sun cream.
Well, I just didn't think it's, you know, March sunshine. I think it'd be that hot. But, yeah. Good to be back, though. Good to be back.
Have you had to put after sun
on? He plays golf, you know.
I've heard about his golf once or twice. Mm-hmm. Did you put after sun on?
Yes, last night.
Did you? Does it feel better?
Aloe vera.
aloe vera, yeah. Oh, God, I needed it.
I can tell you a funny story about after sun, if you like.
I'd just be like a ready break man in bed. I'm just glowing.
It's a ready break man. What a reference. If you don't know, YouTube it. I burnt my feet last summer and got some after sun, but it was fake tan. So I was just putting fake tan on my feet.
Like,
and they were such
ones.
A weird colour because they were red from being burnt and then orange from the fake tan. They did not feel better.
Mm. I spent a month in Dubai 10 years ago and the apartment I was staying in had a roof terrace. But because it was in foreign language, the cream, I was actually putting moisturiser on thinking it was suntan lotion.
Oh, dear.
I bet your skin was soft
Surely
and
I've
burnt.
Had a big number on the front, which indicates which
factor
it is. Well, it
might have been, but it was like moisturiser 6, whatever it was.
SPF.
It was just moisturiser. Yeah.
If it was SPF 6, that's pretty low.
Yeah, but it didn't say anything like that because it was in Arabic. So I didn't understand a word it was saying. Anyway.
Maisie and I just took a little walk to Tesco.
You did. I was sat here. I was sat in the stadium in the sunshine, feeling very lucky.
And we met a podcast fan.
Hey,
a Potter.
We didn't get his name, did we?
I know. I'd literally just thought the same thing. Why did we not ask his name?
He's out there.
He knows who he is.
By Tesco, their other shops are available at Stretford. That's where we saw him, and he said that he's really enjoyed the podcast and it's got him through.
Had a lovely little selfie with him.
So that was nice to meet the fans, wasn't it, Maisie?
So good. So good, getting our 10,000 steps in.
Why are you so obsessed with your 10,000 steps?
It was Helen.
Only because I told him to.
You know it's an arbitrary number.
Yeah, no, we only got about 1,500. We just walked Tesco and back.
Yeah.
Anyway, like boring chap. What's not boring is Tony Coton.
Yeah.
Who you are here to talk about today.
Our first scout.
First player come scout.
Well,
yeah.
sort of. Jim Ryan, sort of. Was
yeah, good point. Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
He's
but
a current
scout.
For
the sake of this conversation, we'll say that. Sam.
Yeah. That's the second time I've done that. I've claimed it's the first something and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Maisie, you obviously know TC.
Yes, wonderful.
Very well.
Wonderful lad. I have
he always
so
makes
much,
you laugh a lot, doesn't he?
He's different class. Some of the stories he comes out with are hilarious. Some I'm sure he'll tell today, but some are for the pub.
Also, guys, we're going to have to talk about City. Because he was there for 6 years or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we'll just skip over that a little bit.
Yeah, we'll fly through that bit.
There was a blip in your career, obviously. And we'll go past it.
Maisie, he obviously came here as a player when you were here, but the majority of the time he was a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I roomed with him for the 6 months.
Oh, did you?
TC was there. And he came in the year we won the double, 95-96. One thing I learned from TC is that, we might touch on it in this, I'm not sure, but we had to. I used to have to tell him stories to get him to sleep. I know.
What?
I know.
That is very strange. What kind of stories would you tell him? You just make them up?
What kind of stories would you tell him?
There could be anything. Oh, like Mills and Boone. Love stories and stuff like that. And it.
Sorry, what? This is such... I feel like I'm in like a parallel universe or something here. What are you talking about? You used to tell Tony Coton love stories to get him to sleep?
He would say to me,
why
Maisie,
is nobody else finding
Maisie,
this strange?
Tell me a story. And I'm like, about what? I mean, just make one up.
That's what my kids do, but they're 6 and 4.
I know. TC was 35, 36, and he would say to me, tell me a story. Tell me something. And he would go along like a little kid saying, and then what happened? And then what happened?
That is amazing.
And then he'd fall asleep. And I actually did it before the Liverpool Cup final in 96. I had to tell him a story. We were rooming together. And I had to tell him a story. I couldn't actually tell you what it was about because it was, God, 24 years ago, 25 years ago. But, yeah, it was a bit of a love story.
It sounds like a love story.
Whereabouts in the chronological chart of his life story can we get this in?
I don't know.
It's definitely one for you, Sam.
But yeah, great lad. Lovely, Lovely goalkeeper. Lovely goalkeeper.
Lovely person.
But I tell you what, wonderful goalkeeper as well. And it's TC.
Once again, we are sat at Old Trafford looking out over the pitch, sort of, and it is a beautiful sunny day, first of the year, probably, and we are joined by Tony Cotton, who has a fascinating career we want to talk about, including, obviously, quite a long spell at City, which isn't something we've talked about much on this podcast. But first, we should talk about what you're doing now. You are currently a scout here at United.
Yeah, the role is chief goalkeeping scout, and it's good to be back.
Yeah.
And finally, I'm here. Yeah. Really enjoying it.
Good, I'm glad.
Talk to us about your childhood. Siblings, where did you live?
Sorry?
Where did you grow up?
So I was born in Tamworth, Staffordshire. I've got an older sister and an older brother. I think that's why my dad was really supportive of me in football, because my brother was a really good cricketer and Warwickshire wanted to sign him at 16. And then he met his wife and just packed in everything. Packed in all sport, packed it in. And I think my dad was devastated with that. So when I certainly had the interest and, you know, showed prowess in football, he supported me. To the point where when I was 14, I was a schoolboy at Wolves. He would get up at 2 o'clock. He was a lorry driver. He would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go and do his journey, drop his load, wherever it was. So let's rephrase that. It's him.
I know. Listen, I understand.
I don't know why I looked at it. I knew as soon as I said it, I just wouldn't have looked at you. So we get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, go and deliver the goods that he had on his lorry, and then so he could get back to take me to training at Wolves. So that was the dedication from my dad. So
was he into football?
He didn't play. My grandfather played for the town team, but my dad didn't play. But even as a kid, was stood by me goal. You know, it's to the point when you're a kid and you let a goal in, even if you were winning 5-0 and I let a goal in, I started crying.
Aww.
Yeah.
What age is that, TC?
So I started playing when I was 7.
Always a goalie?
No. So I think I was brought up on a estate called Jill Way Estate in Tamworth. That's what I was born in a house on that estate. So all my childhood was on that estate. And then they formed a team called Jill Way Boys. And then they had these trials down the big park. And I went down and I was the smallest and youngest. So I got stuck in nets, didn't I? Got stuck in net. I think it was the fact that I just liked getting all my clothes dirty and my gear dirty and all that. So I stayed in, and then we started playing games. So I played for the year above, then like most footballers did in their early days. And then they formed my year. So they moved the year above to the Sunday, and I played for my year on the Saturday. So I did that. And then when I went to secondary school, we had the trials in the first couple of weeks of getting to secondary school, and they had the old wooden goalposts. I got shoved into the goalpost, really hurt my shoulder. So the teacher just said, I remember his name, Mr. Betts, he said to me, can you play out? And the lads had said, yeah, he's not bad. So I ended up being a centre-half, funny enough. And so I never ever, all through school, never ever played in goals. I played centre-half, and I captained the county as a centre-half.
Is that 14-year-old?
Yeah.
Then?
So you remember Wayne Clark?
Yeah, yeah.
He was centre forward. He was in my county team.
Who was in goal though?
Where was he from? Can't remember. I remember at school. I can't remember the county keeper, but I can remember my school goal. He was called Gutsy Wilson. big fat Anthony Wilson. We might have to cut that one out. As well.
Not sure that's very PC these days.
Yeah. Coming from you, what are you saying about him?
Gutsy Wilson, that's a valid name.
So, so Anthony Wilson was the goalie. We won the league the first year, and then, you know, we had to play rugby and all different things. And a lot of the football lads that won that league at school went off and wanted to play rugby and do this and do that. And so we lost the couple of key players, really. So we didn't really win anything again after that first year at school. So then the weekends was the same. And then at 14, I got a knock on my door at my mum and dad's. And it was my cousin. And he was with the manager of a Sunday morning pub team called the Mercian. And he said, look, our goalie's ill. Can you come and play? And my dad went, what, men's football? He's only 14. And I was like, until I was 15, I didn't shoot up until I was sort of 15. And I remember the manager saying to me, he said, when I saw you, he said, and you took your shirt off and you had your little vest on. He said, I thought, oh, God, what have we done here? Like, you know? And we were playing a team called the Dolphin. They had a notorious centre forward called Chris Bradshaw. And he's come through and I went straight out at his feet, took it off his feet. And they looked at me, Dad, and went, oh, we think he'll be all right. So that was it. I stayed in the team. Their goalie never got back
in. You stayed in the pub team?
Yeah, I stayed
at 14?
At 14, yeah. So I was drinking half a shandy at 14 after a game. Amazing.
Is that what and you did? Go back to the pub?
I go back to the pub. It was mainly because my dad wanted a pint.
Yeah.
You know, because I'd got another game at 2 o'clock for my junior team. So he'd have a couple of pints and then run me straight to the... So I'd normally have a bag of crisps and a sausage roll in the pub.
Brilliant.
And that was my pre-match for my afternoon game. So that was my sort of childhood growing up there. And then I'd got spotted by Wolves, as I say. And then they said no. You know, they made a decision and said, look, we don't, you know, not ready for an apprenticeship. So I come back and I started playing for a local team, Mylote Rovers. And we just cleaned up in the Midlands. We won everything, both the first team and the second team. And then I'd got an invite to go down to Birmingham. Oh, sorry, I was at Villa before that, wasn't I? So I was at Villa. I was at Villa as a non-contract. And then we were playing Orient in the FA Floodlit Cup or something. The Floodlit Cup.
That's a great cup name. Floodlit Cup.
Floodlit Cup. Obviously.
Did you only play at night?
I only play at night. Yeah. So. So they said, come for a few days and see how you get on with the lads. But the lads in there was like Gary Shaw, remember Gary Shaw? Gary Shaw was in there, Brendan Ormsby, people like that. And there was a lad called Ian Hendry, was his name. And one day I've sat down to have me a meal. And you know what you're like as kids, you don't get a lot to eat, do you? Well, in them days. Yeah. So you're starving when by the time you come back, you've done two training sessions, this, that and the other. As they put up, I remember it as clear as anything. It was mashed potatoes, pork chop, all the veg. And next minute he says, oh, there's a phone call on the thingy. And so, like, gullible, I got up, went in, picked the payphone up in the digs. Nobody there. Come back, pork chop's gone, isn't it? It's normal. So they're all laughing like Maisie is now.
That's brilliant.
He's definitely the type that's still a pork chop.
So this lad was a bit of a bully. And I said, who's had me pork chop? Boy, what are you going to do about it? But I said, who's had me pork chop? He went, I have, like that. So he went down. That was it. And I just went in, got me 2p out. It was 2p or 10p slot. Rang me dad, come and pick me up. He said, why, what's happened? I said, just pick me up. And then I got a telling off all the way home that I'm throwing my chances away, you know, this, that and the other. So Villa kept
me. Nicky pork chop, didn't he?
Yeah. Nicky pork chop.
You deserved it.
You don't do that, do you, after?
No.
When you've been training all day. Anyway, it was the fact that he was a bully. That was the fact. So that was my days at Villa. They rang up and asked me to come back and this, that. And the fact that I was on a non-contract thing. So I was really on an extended trial.
Yeah. How old was you then?
But servicing the youth team. I was 16. And then all of a sudden, the manager from Mylote Rovers just said to me, he said, Jim Smith's been on the phone. He wants you to go down to Birmingham for a trial. And that was a team I'd supported as a kid. So I went down to Birmingham for a week's trial. That week then became a month, played in a few games. And then they said, right, we'll keep you till the end of the season. We'll sign you on till the end of the season. I thought, oh, I've won the pulls. So I did another season then. Got a contract for another season. And then they said, that's it, we don't think you're going to make the grade. We're letting you go. me and the lad I was in digs with, Terry Goode, who was a centre forward. And they said, look, we've got a tournament in Germany, two tournaments. Do you want to go?
This is after you've just been released?
No, yeah.
Yeah.
So I've been told I'm being released, yeah. But did I want to go? They haven't got a goalie for the tournament, yeah. Had they, basically. So I said to Terry, I said, how do you want to play this? I said, do you want to go and mess about? I said, or do you want to, or should, I said, he said, are you going? I said, I've never been abroad before. I went, so really, because I hadn't been abroad, I just wanted to go. And I thought, right, I'll sample, get an experience, because it might not happen again. And he said, right, okay. So we went, we won the tournament. I got goalkeeper of the tournament. He got top scorer of the tournament. And I was cleaning my dad's car one day in the summer, and the phone went. My mum said, Jim Smith's on the phone. He said, we think we've made a mistake. We want to offer you another year. And it happened like that. I went, right. He said, can you come to the ground tomorrow? So I went to the ground, signed a new deal for a year. So that Christmas then, I made my debut.
Your first touch in professional football was saving a penalty, right?
Yeah, so my debut come around in 54 seconds. I hadn't touched the ball. The centre-half gave a penalty away. And I saved it, yeah. So 54 seconds.
Who was that against?
Sunderland. At John Orley. At St Andrews, railway end. Packed.
How good
that? Must have felt pretty good.
yeah, it did. I mean, so I was from Tamworth, which is just an overspill, really, from Birmingham, really. So you're either Villa, mm-hmm. Birmingham. You have the odd Albion there, the odd Wolves. But it's mainly Villa and Birmingham fans in Tamworth. So I was cheered when I went out that night by a lot of people and growled at by others.
Did you win the game?
We won 3-2, yeah. And the late Frank Worthington scored the winner on my debut. Great goal. Bit like his one for Bolton against Ipswich. Controlled it on his thigh and volleyed it past Chris Turner to earn me my first win bonus in football.
You say, yeah, about Frank Worthington, what was he like?
I can honestly say, Maisie, that we used to get in double early in case he come in early, because we used to get all our jobs done and we used to just sit outside, come whatever the weather was, sit outside waiting for Frank to arrive, because he had an aura about him, didn't he? He had a film star, pop star, soccer star sort of persona, you know. What's he wearing? How's it? You know, I remember first seeing him. He was the first bloke that I saw in an Afghan coat. You remember the Afghan coats? Do you know what I mean? They're like big furry coats, furry moon boots. But he carried it off. Do you know what I mean? He had this strut about him.
When's this? What year is this now? This would be...
So this would be 1980. 81. So we used to just see him arrive, like, you know, and he had the bootlace tie, and he was just class. And then he used to stay after training and practice his skills and just what he did with a ball, and you know what I mean. And I just remember things like, he say, who wants to challenge me at crossbar, you know, edge of the box, and he's nobody beat him, like, you know what I mean. And but it was just this aura he gave off. Do you know what I mean? Frank's in the medical room. Oh, I'm going to go and get a strapping. And he didn't need a strapping. Just wanted to hear what he was talking about. You know what I mean? That was just Frank, you know what I mean? It's just a real sad end to his life, really, with his Alzheimer's and everything. But people have got loads of stories about him like that, you know.
You got any?
Yeah, I have, actually. So we played away at Arsenal, night game. And he's come down the bus and he went, do you have to go through the city centre on your way home? So we've got back about midnight back to St Andrews. And he said to me, do you have to go through the city centre? I said, no, but I can, Frank, if you want. I'm in my dad's ill, I'm in Avenger. And he said, I just need dropping off in the city centre. I said, yeah, okay. So he gets in the car like, oh, Frank. I'm giving Frank a lift, like, you know what I mean? And he said, what music you got on? And I only had the Drifters. On an 8-track, you know, you got no chance of what I'm on about. But there were great big cassettes like that, weren't they? They were like a house brick, and you slammed it in. I'm playing the Drifters. He said, you got nothing else? He said, no. Right, he said, I'll bring some stuff in for you tomorrow. I knew it'd be Elvis.
Yeah.
He right as rain, he brought in the next day, there was a load of 8-track Elvis stuff. So anyway, we pull up in on Broad Street. I said, all right, Frank. He goes, no, no, come in. Just have half an hour with me. Come in. I went, Frank, I said, look, I'm going back to Tamworth. He said, TC, just come. He said, I'll get you a coat. You don't have to have a drink. He said, I want you to see this band. This band are going to be massive. I said, who are they? He said, well, there's the bouncer. He says, there's a glass collector. There's the cloakroom fella. He says, and there's a cleaner come chef. I said, what? He said, never formed a band. So I'm thinking. And I went, right, okay, I'll come in. Anyway, everybody's like, oh, Frank's in. He's been handed a glass of champagne straight away. And he's going, these will be brilliant. Anyway, so this band's on and I'm thinking, oh, they're all right. It was Duran Duran. In the Rum Runner Club in Broad Street. And after I've seen him, obviously years after and this, that and the other. And I said, you weren't wrong with that band, was you? I said, were they all? He said, they all worked in the club doing odd jobs. Mm. And then obviously in that's the daytime, in the daytime, that's where they do the practicing. So that's a good story about him, really. You know, me going in not knowing who these were, saying that they were
what's great band.
And we ended up playing five-a-side with them at Villa Leisure Centre many, many, many times with them. You know, brilliant. So
any good
at football?
Yeah.
I thought they were better at football than there was as a band. Myself, I'm not a Durani. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, so they were all right. Yeah. Yeah.
So you've spent your time in Birmingham and then they get relegated.
Yeah.
The next year is 83.
We stayed up on the last game the year before. Mm-hmm. And then, funny enough, we played Southampton again. But the one we stayed up, we played away. McArthur scored in the last seconds. And then the following year, we drew 0-0. But that meant we went down. Mm-hmm. We played Southampton again, but it was at home.
So yeah. What kind of situation did that put you in? Were you
being a Birmingham fan, obviously devastated. There was three or four of us in the team that were all Blues mm-hmm. fans. So we just said, well, we don't know what's going to happen. There'd been no rumours that any of us would leave. So we started did the pre-season, started the season, and we were unbeaten. I know we were unbeaten. And we played Fulham away, and we won 1-0 away at Fulham. Wayne Clark scored. And then the next day, we were in. We never had many days off at Birmingham, not like today. We were in. We'd had a change of manager. Ron Saunders had come in. And he was the one that really put me in the team and really believed in me. And he just called me in his office. And he just said, we've had an offer from Watford. Graham Taylor was stood behind your goal last night at Fulham. He went, and we've accepted it. He said, we need the money. He says, and you'll be one of a few. I think Noel Blake had gone to Portsmouth a few weeks before. So that was the start of the exodus, yeah. Really. So then I went, and then a few more followed. So Mick Arford went, Pat Vandenauer went. So if, you know, it was...
The gang were broke up.
Yeah, they were all broke up.
What was that like, TC, playing with Mick? No, Blake, as you say.
To be fair, Maisie, they all went on to have good careers, you know what I mean? We weren't far away from... We were hard to beat. Mm. You know, we just never had the firepower, really. You know, Mick scored... that season we stayed up, Mick scored a lot of goals late on, but he got a bad injury and was out for a long time. We were hard to beat. As I say, we had good individual players. We were one or two, maybe three players short of being a really good good team. We lost in the quarterfinals to Watford, actually. And then we got this bit of a reputation off the field, but it was...
Is that the Birmingham 5? Is that the Birmingham 4?
Well, it was saying the Birmingham 6, wasn't it? Because of the... What's it? But it was widely exaggerated. There was one or two scuffles when we were together. And then there was individually people had had one or two skirmishes. So they just grouped it all together and saying we're all wrong-uns. What we were all single and we didn't run away.
Yeah.
Or turn the other cheek as what you would do now. And, you know, if any experience that I can give or anything that I can say to anybody. It's just, it's not worth it. Just turn away and walk away if you get verbally abused or whatever.
Even though there's yourself, Mick Harford, Pat Vandenau, Noel Blake.
Mark Dennis.
I'm not being funny,
like. Robert Hopkins.
You weren't the smallest, the lads to mess about with.
The worst one was the smallest.
Was he?
Hoppy. Yeah. Funny enough. Yeah.
And you're all 6'4", 6'3", 6'4".
Yeah. It was, as I say,
I remember playing against Mick, and he was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a lovely lad, because we played golf with him, but he's horrible.
But I think he's, yeah, but you knew what you were going to get.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about Mick now, he's my best mate. He rings me up, he's moved to Luton, I've moved to Watford, and he rings me up just before we play him. He said, you know I'm going to give you stitches tomorrow, don't you? I said, Mick, I wouldn't expect anything else. And sure enough, there's a scar on my lip. He gave me 4 stitches in my lip.
What did he do?
Elbowed him.
So I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew it was coming.
And he still didn't get out of the way.
But I've took that for how many times he's helped me out off the pitch. You know, and like Maisie saying, I remember Brucey and Pally saying many times that when they're facing him, like, you know, you pick him up. No, you pick him up. You pick him up. Nobody wanted to pick him up.
No.
But the thing with Mick, I think he was hard. But he'd take it as well. Mm. Do you know what I mean? If you give it him back, he'd take it. He wouldn't, you know, this, that,
shy away, yeah.
But you see, in the start of his career, that's what it was like. It was not like today with no contact and things like that, you know. So that was the era we were playing in. You had to look after yourself. He had to try and dominate the centre-half as much as the centre-half tried to dominate him, you know. So,
what was your move to Watford like?
As
from,
I say,
you've gone from Duran Duran now to Elton John.
Excuse me. No, so it just, as I say, come out of the blue, and we'd played Fulham, and then Ron Saunders calls me in. We've had an offer from Watford. You're free to go and speak to him. I said, right, okay. So I went down to near the groundsman's tea room at the training ground where the payphone was, rang my dad, and I said, look, Watford have come in for me. He said, what? I said, Watford have come in for me, have accepted a bid. He said, how much? I said, I ain't got a clue. I said, I'm free to go and speak to him. He said, right, go down there, listen to what they have to say, don't come back without signing. I went, what? I said, but I'm leaving Blues. He said, I know. And look what you've been up to the last, off the field. Get away from your mates. And that was it. And then anyone will tell you, once you speak, sit in front of Graham Taylor, you know, like great managers do, you know, you're signing for them, and you might be signing for less money or whatever.
Yeah.
They just sell it to you, and you're the best thing and everything, and what we're going to do and this, that, the other, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And I looked at the team, and whereas we hadn't scored a lot of goals at Birmingham, we hadn't sort of let many in. We'd got a good record where we hadn't let many in. Watford were the opposite. They were scoring loads of goals, but letting loads in. So he'd sold it to me that they'd got a young back four, and he'd heard me at Fulham and being vocal and giving information out. So I go to Watford, I sign, and let 5 in on my debut. I said, I remember walking back in, and the press wanted the thing, but it was funny enough, I got joint man of the match that day. Let 5 in. It was 5-4 against Everton. Neville Southall was at the other end, and we both shaking our head coming off. And we both got joint man of the match. I'd never known it before. 9 goals have gone in, and the 2 goalies got man of the match. It was incredible.
What was your transfer fee from Birmingham to Watford?
$300,000 at the time. So I walked into the... You've got to do the press. I said, I don't want to do the press after that. So I thought, right, so they're all there waiting because it was my debut and all that. I said, before you ask, I said, I've just asked, the ink ain't dry on my contract, so I'm going back to Birmingham. Somebody wrote it. So this is why he's brought you in, because they're a so attacking-minded team. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had Barnsley on one wing, Callaghan on the other, Riley and Mo Johnson up front. You know, we were really...
Mo Johnson.
Really, really a good attacking team. And then we bought in a fella called John McLennan. Remember John McLennan? Can you remember him? We bought him from Rangers. You should. He's a Northern Ireland international. Captain of Northern Ireland.
Helen wouldn't have been born at this
time. No, she wouldn't. But,
nearly seven.
so he come in and he made all the difference to us, and I think we finished fifth. That. So we, you know, it was. It got me away from Birmingham. It got me to what you say, a small club, family club in Hertfordshire, and it was brilliant. I loved it, absolutely loved it there. And then it couldn't have gone any better for me, other than us. We got to the semi final of the FA Cup, and I broke my thumb the week before, so I missed the semi final. As I say, we finished high in the league. We were an attacking team. It was always exciting games. I mean, we beat Man United 5-1. We had three games near the end of the season. We beat Man United 5-1, Tottenham 5-1, Chelsea, I think Chelsea 4-1. And it was like, wow, come on. You know, it was really entertaining. But when you got Barnsley in full flow before he's moved to Liverpool, and Callahan was a good winger, great player. So it was exciting. For me personally, it went well. I won their Player of the Year three times.
A bit like David De Gea then?
Yeah.
Doesn't happen very often.
Which, the only person who didn't say well done really to me was Graham Taylor. He said, he shook my hand and he said, well done. He said, this is the second time you've won it. And I went, I said, you don't look too pleased. He said, why do I want my goalkeeper to win? To win Player of the Year. I went, all right, yeah, I see your point.
Any run-ins with Alan? Not run-ins, but...
He was very much around the club every home game. When he was not on tour, he was there. And he'd always come down to the changing room about 1:45 before a game and wishes all the best.
Mm. I really wanted you to say he always came down and sang a song.
No, but I have got a story about that.
Oh, yeah, go. Does that involve you singing a bit of the song?
Yeah, so we went on tour to... So when Graham left, we went on tour to China. And we sat at this banquet, and we're in this Great Wall of China cup thing.
You've been in some cups, by the way.
Yeah, that nobody's heard of. So, and the biggest, by the way, it stood about that big and about that wide. So we've got there, and then there's a banquet with all the teams that are in this tournament, and they've all got up and sang. Now, we've got no manager because Graham's left to go to Villa. We haven't. Dave Bassett did come in, but he didn't come on this tour. So Elton said, right, Graham's left. The new manager's not. I'll come support you, and all that. So he come with his manager John Reid on the tour, and Billy Ayles, the physio, was acting as the team manager. So he said, right. He said,
is this end of the season then?
Yeah. End of the season. So he says, right. He said, we're gonna have to get up and sing a song. And we said, well, you're the pop star. You just get up there, like, you know. He said, no, look, all the team have got up like that. So he said, right. He said, we'll sing Stand By Me. So I've got...
Could have picked one of his own, like, but fair enough.
I've got pictures of it and all this. So we get up there, we're singing this. Anyway, the food was awful in the hotel. So he said, look, every time you progress in this tournament, I'll take you to a westernised restaurant and give you a steak and chips, basically, this and the other. So I said to the lads, I said, you better win this tournament. This was when I'd broken my thumb, you see, so I'd just gone on the trip anyway. So anyway, we progressed it, went through, and we ended up winning this tournament, as we should have done. He said, right, we're having a party before we go back to England. We're going to have a party. And he gave me a load of money. He said, right, go and get all the drinks in, get a room set up, sort it out. And that was my job for the trip, really. So we're in there, and he said, right, he said, well done. It's been a great trip. He said, I'm going to get on the piano tonight. If you want to ask anybody in the hotel that you may have seen, ask them to come along. So we're all having a drink, and he's on there, and he's going through the full repertoire. It's like a proper concert, really. He's doing everything. Anyway, all of a sudden, these three blokes from Coventry who've been working over there are there. Next minute, the one's next to him, and his mate's taking a picture of him, and he's another one's there, and he's posing like this next to his piano, and he's doing all this. And Elton starts singing, I forget what the tune was, but he starts singing about this bloke next to him, and this bloke is oblivious to it. He's totally abusing him, right, you know, in this, and this bloke's just happy to be out. Anyway, I says, I'll go and get my camera. I'll take some pictures of this. And I walked out, and as I'm walking out, I'm thinking, right, go down, get my key from reception, back up to my room. Oh, I'll be back in 10 minutes, like that. Unknown to me, they'd polish these, they'd clean this, like, these glass doors, honestly. And they'd always been open. Well, I hit this glass door with my forehead. Like that. Immediately turn around to see if the lads were looking, and all the lads were got their backs still looking at Elton. But all the waitresses and waiters that were lined up by the door were holding it in, you know, the Chinese being ultra polite and just holding it all in like that. So I'm going out and I'm getting the lift. I look, I've got an egg on me forehead out here, like, you know, that's a cabbage cream egg. There's a little graze across it. And I said, oh, that must have been funny if you'd have seen that, like, you know what I mean? So anyway, I get back, I'm taking a few pictures of the lads out there. And this bloke says, take some of me now. He said, oh, I've got no more film in my camera. He went, I'll get my camera. And he goes bowling off. And I went, lads, turn around now, watch. And he hit this door. He hit this door like I did, right? And he fell back like this. Well, they couldn't contain it now. They've probably not seen it in ages, never seen two do it in 15 minutes. The waiters are on the floor, the waitresses are giggling away and all this. The lads are in bits. Anyway, we never saw him. He never come back. So the next morning, so Elton carries on, blah, blah, blah. We have a great night. Next morning, we're having breakfast. And I'm sat across Steve Sherwood. Next minute, he just covers me in Rice Krispies. Bursts out, belly laughing, like that. And he can't get it out. He goes, these Rice Krispies are coming. I said, what is it? It was the bloke that hit the window. Two black eyes like a panda. Two black eyes and a big sticky Robbie Fowler sticky tape across his nose like that. That was our trip with Elton.
But hang on though, what about the Stand By Me? We missed that. Well,
we didn't
Did you
get
sing?
Back. We didn't get back to number one though. The group sang, yeah. The group, the lads all sang.
You sang that with Elton.
We sang that with Elton, yeah, on stage, yeah.
Brilliant.
So every time that comes on, actually, I'll just remember that night.
So you spent six seasons years at Watford, and then tell us about the move to Man City. We'll not stay on that for long, obviously.
Yeah. So 6 years at Watford, great. And then Howard Kendall was manager of Man City. I just had a phone call saying that they'd bid £1 million and it'd been accepted by Watford.
Was that a record at the time?
I think there was me and then Nigel Martin not long after, I think. I think.
You were first.
Yeah. So then I flew up to Manchester, went to Harper's restaurant. You remember Harper's?
Harper's, yeah.
With Howard. He liked to drink Howard. And there's me and Neil Poynton signing on the same day. And I just remember being in the toilets at Harper's, steaming. I'm thinking, I'm sorry, what's he thinking? I'm signing for, he's got me steaming drunk. And it was Howard's way of getting to know the player.
Yeah.
Not getting to know what they were like, because you get loose lips, don't you, when you've had a drink.
Mm.
And I didn't realise at the time what he was doing. Anyway, yeah, signed there. And then, unfortunately, I think by the September, so that was in the July, by the September, he'd gone back to Everton. So I didn't get a chance to work with Howard Kendall for very long. And then Peter Reid took over.
Who also liked to drink.
It was at ex-Everton. No, Reedy took over, and then we were banned in Europe. European English clubs were banned in Europe, and we'd finished fifth. So we'd have played in Europe, which was was unfortunate. We had a decent sort of run. We fifth, I think, seventh, ninth, and then that all come to an end, and he suddenly got the sack out of the blue. And then Brian Orton come in, who I really like Brian.
Yeah.
Brian, top man, good coach, good manager. His man management was really good, as the others were.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it, really. You don't want to say too long on Man City, do you?
No, it's up to you. But
we should, before we move on, I presume your final game for City was against Southampton?
Yeah, I broke my leg.
Yeah, it was five places, right?
I won't go to them places again now. I had 5 fractures, which was quite comical at the time. Not for me, but...
It doesn't sound that funny.
The way... I don't know. You ever broke your leg?
No.
So I'm towards the end of my career. So I'm 36. And I knew straight away that it was a serious one. I'd had a few injuries in the past, but I knew it was a bad one. And all I remember was sort of sitting on the turf. It was my right leg, but my left leg couldn't keep still. It was like the nerve, and that was just jumping around. I'm thinking, the pain's coming from this. Why is this one jumping around like this? It was weird. And I kept grabbing handfuls of the turf at the Dell, and Kevin Ball come over to me. I said, I've bust my leg. And he said, that's all I kept saying. I've bust my leg. I got stretched off, went to hospital in Southampton.
Who did it?
It was a nothing was it? Challenge. No. It was Egil Austin.
Young got done.
Egil Austin stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a ball in between, and I've come out and he's come in. And
accident.
You wouldn't. I don't hold him responsible or anything. So I go to the hospital. The kit man's come with me. So I'm waiting to get the x-rays. The ambulance have already cut my sock down, took my shin pad off, and there was just like a graze, really. And they said, it'd just be bad bruising. This was the ambulance man. I said, this ain't bad bruising. This is and this is still going there. They've given me some morphine. And I said, this is a broken leg. I'm telling you, it's a broken leg. And I remember Cookie saying, you never know. It might just be bad bruising. You know? And I'll give him a mouthful. Anyway, it goes in. So I'm waiting to go in for my x-rays, and the woman's doing all your name checking this and all this. And she said, this will probably be bad bruising. I went, not another one. But I didn't say it like that. I give her a mouthful as well. And I said, this is a broken leg. I'm telling you, this is a broken leg. I know it's a broken leg. Anyway, I remember sort of lying on the thing, getting the x-rays done. I could see Cookie in the, they go behind the screen, don't they? I could see Cookie's face like that. And he's poking his head up, and the woman says, Mr. Coton, you are right. There is a fracture. I said, I didn't tell you. would somebody ever listen to me? But, you've got a second fracture there, Mr. Coton, like that. And I could see Cookie going, like that. There's a third, like that. You've got 5 fractures, Mr. Coton. She said, 4 in the tibia and 1 in the fibula. I went, all right. Okay, like that, and I could just see Cookie's head down like that. He gets up, walks out. He's obviously ringing somebody, the secretary, and all that, saying we'd flown down on a little plane from Sunderland to Southampton. Don't think TC, there'll be a spare seat. I don't think TC will be coming back. Anyway, they put me in plaster and they tried to get me on this plane, and they couldn't, and got the Southampton.
So you're on the plane with the lads going back to Sunderland?
They're trying to get me back up to the hospital up in the north. They put me in plaster.
Why could they not get you on?
Because I was a stretcher case and the plane was too small. They couldn't get me around. So they had to order a bigger plane. So I had to go back to Southampton Hospital, stayed the night in Southampton, and go try and get up.
Is that all they did, just put it in plaster and not pin it or anything?
Put it in plaster there. Got me back up the next day, straight in, and they split the plaster to let the swelling come out.
Can't believe you got on a flight with it.
Yeah. Let the swelling come out, and then I had to have a rod put in through my kneecap and then down my shin, which has now been removed, and it's holding a yucca plant up in my house.
That's quite cool.
So it's a constant reminder every time I look at that plant.
Did you think that would be the end of your playing career?
The age I was, I thought this is going to be a struggle to get back. And, I tried, but I just, I was just still limping and, I couldn't even kneel down properly. So there's no chance of throwing myself on the floor.
So how did you end up moving to United for £500,000?
Oh, yeah, we've missed that bit.
Comes next, doesn't it?
We've missed that bit out, so you'll have to put that in. No. So I went from City to United.
Yeah.
So... I went,
where were you when you broke your leg?
Sunderland.
Oh, of course you were. Sorry, I thought it was at City.
So we'll have to, you'll have to change yeah. that around. So I went from City.
Yeah.
And then I had a bad injury here. Alan Ball had come in as manager. And it was the Francis Lee era. He just wanted to get all the senior players out and run the club like his dictatorship. So all of a sudden, I was moving house from South Manchester, beautiful house, to Bolton.
Still emotional about that, clearly.
So a reminder every day. So my wife, as you can gather, my wife's from Bolton. Nothing against Bolton. Man United fans from Bolton. But she took me from my dream house in Bramall up to Bolton. And I remember on the day of moving, I was literally on the top of Barton Bridge when I got a phone call from the secretary at Man City saying Man United had come in. And I nearly went over the side. I went, what? 35, 36, and I'm getting... you're free to go to Old Trafford and speak to Martin Edwards. So I came down here, spoke about the thing, but I needed to speak to Sir Alex first. Mm-hmm. So I spoke to Sir Alex. He sort of sold it on the fact that it was 12 points behind Newcastle, the same year as the infamous Kevin Keegan rant. Mm-hmm. I came in, and I think Peter... Am I giving myself a pat on the back? I don't know, but Peter upped his game apparently because he'd been in training. He'd got no competitor, nobody putting an edge to his game. He was just unbelievable. He was just, I think the game at Newcastle was the one where Eric scored. He was just unbelievable that night. Even in training, I knew that it'd have to be a bad injury to Peter or a really dramatic loss of form for me to get a game.
Sorry, can I just interrupt? When you talked about Sir Alex, did he mention the situation with Peter to you and the fact that
he just said, look,
I need
cover in that position. They'd only got Kevin Pilkington, who was relatively young at that time. And he said to me, I need some experience. I need to put an edge to Pete's game. And he was perfectly upfront. He said, look, I think he's the best in the world. I said, so do I. I said, he said, you might be lucky, you might do another Les Seeley, come in, playing cup finals, you know, like Les did and this, that and the other, you might get your games. And I said, listen, if I can come and do a job and I don't play, but it puts an edge to Peter's game, I've done a job, if you know what I mean. And I remember him coming to me after they clawed back the points, won the league, as Maisie will testify. And then beat Liverpool in the cup final. I remember at the cup final, he was great at that. He'd go round everybody, family, wife, girlfriend, whatever. And he come to my table and he said, can I have a word? And he said, look, he said, I really appreciate what you did. He said, you don't know, you might not have taken part out on the park. He said, but what you did in training and whatever with Peter, he upped his level. He says, and we've won the double. So I appreciated that. He didn't have to do that. And I said, look, boss, I said, I know I've got 2 years left on my contract. I said, but we've got the influx of all the foreign players coming into the game, you know, Zola and Hullett and all these, Ravanelli and Giannino were coming into. I said, I want to finish my career by playing.
Yeah.
He said, okay, son. He said, that was the deal that we had. He said, go away, have a good holiday. He said, I know there's a few people that have made phone calls inquiring about you. So there was Wolves, Derby, and then Sunderland with Reedy. And I really thought at the time, I thought I'd made my mind up I was going to go to Wolves because I'd started as a schoolboy. And I thought it never worked out for me there. To go back and eventually, my grandfather and my uncles were all season ticket holders. I thought, you know, going back to the Midlands, you know, it'd be nice to go back and finish there. And then Peter Reid come on the phone and I'd worked with him at Man City. And I just said to my dad, what do you think? He went, well, it'll be a lot easier for me coming to see you at Wolves and we'll having to go up to Bloomy Sunderland. And he said, but maybe the better the devil you know. You know how Peter works, this, that and the other. He promised me a coaching role as well, this, that and the other. So in the end, I went up there. I went to Sunderland. Man City sold me for 400,000 to Man United, and Sir Alex sold me for 600,000.
Yeah, that's not bad, is it?
And I hadn't played.
Yeah.
So that was the business model of Man United at that time. They made a 200,000 on somebody who'd never played.
Yeah. Just before we move on too far, as someone who'd played for a few clubs and obviously was a goalkeeper, what were your thoughts on Peter Schmeichel when you turned up and you first saw him in training? Because you talked about thinking he was the best in the world, but when you actually, I guess at that point, you hadn't seen him yet.
No. So I hadn't seen him close hand. I played against him.
Yeah.
And he played well against us, you know. So I knew what he was like as a keeper. What was really interesting for me was walking into the cliff for the first time and seeing what made these different. The best. I think that was the lure for me. Mm-hmm. Knowing I wouldn't play, I took that as a given, but fingers crossed I might do. But I wanted to see what it was. What was so special about Sir Alex Ferguson? What was so special about Brian Kidd's training? What was so special about these players? And I think Maisie will probably agree. It wasn't the training. It wasn't the... There was no technology then, like there is now with the sports science and everything. There was nothing like that. Kiddo's training was quite basic. It was organised. It was enjoyable. The gaffer was out every day, like he always has been in his career, watching the lads training, giving his input, G'ing people up and this, that and the other. I think the fact was they just had better players than anybody else in every department. And that was the thing that struck me, really. It was like laid back. I couldn't believe that this such massive club was really family orientated as well, in terms of everybody got along on in the dressing room. You know, they'd have a night out or an afternoon or whatever. Team spirit was really good, which is important anywhere. So for me, I was probably expecting all singing something completely different to what I'd been used to, and it wasn't. So it's the strangest thing that on a match day, because you're used to it, Maisie, and I wasn't used to this, simple things like, I couldn't believe they were eating Jaffa cakes and bananas at half time. I'd never had that anywhere before. At Birmingham, we used to, on the way out, we used to have a nip of brandy. That was it. But like even stuff like that, sweets and
jelly babies and stuff.
Yeah. Jelly babies and stuff like that, and Jaffa cakes and bananas, all there ready. The thing, and I was thinking, what's this all about? That was the thing that struck me. Simple things like that, because I'd never known that anywhere. But basically, what struck me was the fact that it wasn't rocket science. It wasn't mind blowing stuff. It was the fact that the manager knew when to change the squad, when he needed to get rid of players and when he needed to bring in fresh blood. But the fact is they had the best players.
Was there a goalkeeper coach then? I think you said there wasn't.
So when I was there, I came in and we had Alan Hodgkinson came in for one morning a week. Mm-hmm. I'd had Hodgie before at Watford, so I knew Alan Hodgkinson. Mm-hmm. Peter tried to avoid having that session with him. So every time Hodgie come in, Peter would have a strain of some kind. So it was me and the younger kids that used to do the sessions with him. So I knew what to expect with Hodgie's training. I knew I knew what it entailed, and it wasn't too taxing on the body. It was really just ticking over, really, and it just took you away from the group for one morning a week.
But when you then took up that role in 97, were you the first full-time goalkeeping coach at the club?
Yeah. So I remember it as clear as anything. So I'm on my crutches at Sunderland. We play Man United at Roker Park. I'm in the corridor and Sir Alex and Kiddo come down the corridor. Wait, blah, blah, blah. I had my back to them. They shouted at me and they come back up the corridor. Talked about the injury, this, that, and the other. But I said, look, when you're fit, what are you going to be doing, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, I'm goalkeeping coach here. Kiddo walked off after a bit, and the gaffer turned back and he went, come and see me. Come and see me when you're back in the area. So I said, right, okay, I will do. And I went, I'm back in 2 days, you know. And he went, what? I said, I'm back in 2 days. I said, it's my mother-in-law's birthday, it weren't. And he went, come and see me at the cliff. I thought, oh, I'm not missing this opportunity, right, you know. So a little white lie, and I turned up at the Cliff. He said, would you ever think of coming back here as goalkeeping coach? Full time, money's not great. Normal Man United stuff. Money's not great, but, you know, build yourself up, do this and do that, you know, and we'll look after you and all this. So I said, yeah, thanks very much. He went, do you want to think about it? Do you want to talk it over with Ellen? And I said, no,
she'll be all right.
Yeah, she'll be fine. Don't worry. Don't worry. And he went, right, okay. He said, we'll be in touch. And that's it. That's how it happened.
Had you always thought of going into coaching?
Well, I'd gone to Sunderland as goalkeeping coach to the point when I was in crutches, I was sat on a chair doing the sessions. Really had me out there doing the sessions. So, yeah, it was something I wanted to do. And then I took over the reserve team at Sunderland. Mm-hmm. And I'd had a little dispute with them over my contract, over a clause in my contract about injury, career-threatening insurance policy. So I'd had a thing that was going to end up, which ended up going to court. So I think in the meantime, they'd give me the reserve team role to pacify me a little bit, you know, not expecting me to do as well as we won the league, which was the Pontins.
Central League, well, yeah.
Yeah, and we won the league the first time for a long time. And I think it was the fact that I'd just come off the plane, this, that and the other. So I'd have senior players that I'd been alongside and young up-and-coming players that really wanted to do well and get a start a career. So I had a good mix because the senior players really adapted themselves and applied themselves the correct way, which sometimes you see senior players, you know, going, you know, travelling down to wherever, 3 hours on a bus for the reserve game and they try and get out of it. But they didn't. So I did. So that went really well, and we won the league. And then the court case come up, and we ended up going to court, and I got put on gardening leave, and it ended not the right way. And then Sir Alex called me, and he said, "Look, we're ready for you now. Are you ready to come in?" I went, "Yeah, it's your right."
Did you have no thoughts about obviously because your time with City and moving to United? Or
not at all. It was only brief. Maisie, when I was here as a player, you know, 6-7 months, I'd seen the gaffer, knew how the gaffer worked, knew how Kiddo worked, knew the rest of the staff. There's like Jimmy Ryan.
I mean, grief and all that from City fans or anything, did that bother you?
That's never ever worried me. No. I still get it now. Still get called Judas and stuff like that, you know what I mean? It's just part and parcel.
Yeah.
But it's never bothered me. And then, obviously, later in my career, I went to Villa.
Yeah.
You know, as a blue nose, that's never ever done, but I've never worried like that. It's
your job, isn't it?
It's your job. It's whatever. And I will say this, and people are saying, how can you go and work for them? You do give 100% wherever you are.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, it's inbuilt in you, isn't it? It's ingrained in you that you do that. So going to Villa, getting some stick off my mates and all that. Listen, the age we are, it's not like it used to be. Yeah. Well, put it this way, nobody's throwing a pint in my face. Like they did early in my career.
So 97, you came here, obviously. What did you do on a day-to-day basis with the keepers then at that time?
We had a mixture. So obviously Peter was just before Peter decided to retire, but not retire. So we had Pete. So my basis really would be speak with the coaches, the different coaches I've had over the years, first team coaches. What's the session for the squad today? What are you doing? When do you need the keepers? How long have I got with the keepers? And then I soon learned, once I got into it, to ask the night before, because on the day, you know, asking them on the day, they were this, that and the other. So what I'd do is ask the night before, and then I could get the keepers in earlier if I needed to. Mm-hmm. If they wanted them straight from the start of their session, I needed to get mine in earlier to get them prepared for going into them sessions. So it was basically liaising with the first team coach, assistant manager, whoever it would be, what the session was entailed, right? Then who were we playing against? So say Wimbledon at the time, that's the next game. You know, there's a lot of aerial balls coming in. There's a lot of balls coming into the box, this, that and the other. So we do a lot of that work.
Which the defenders would be taken care of anyway.
Of course.
Yeah.
No problem. If Maisie was playing, there was no problem.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so really that was that. And then obviously trying to shape young goalies to having a career, you know, that was coming through, have a look at them, see what their development pathways were, game times and all the things that you have to look at for their development. For an instance, like Tom Eaton, we had a lad called Tom Eaton and Tommy Lee, both come through, same age, both great lads, great trainers, everything was there. And then we had to do what we called the growth testing, mm-hmm. at that stage to see which one was going to be the bigger. I know we started with the size of a goalkeeper, but if this kid weren't going to get to 6 foot, you ain't worried about the 6 foot 4, 6 foot 5. So Tom Eaton was going to be the bigger one. So we only could take one, so we took Tom Eaton. So they were all the things that I had to look at of, mm-hmm. Of it wasn't just
ability. Yeah.
Drilling goalkeepers, you know, with drills and working on reflexes or this or kicking or whatever it was. There was a lot more to it, you know. So there was a lot of gym work to be done, plan out the sessions with Cleggy at the time, and then pathways of where they're going to get the game time.
Surely your work as goalkeeping coach was pretty easy when it came to Schmeichel and Van der Sar, but it's the in-between stage probably that everybody wants to know about. So, not being disrespectful to anybody,
the in-between part is because they're the two that everybody sort of reverts back to of being the most successful, you know, what went on in between. You know, we'd had the Ben Fosters and we'd had the Tim Howards, Ricardo Lopez, Mark Bosnich.
I love Barthez in his short sleeves.
Who else?
Roy Carroll.
So there's a numerous goalkeepers that come and went, that Taibbi, mm-hmm. you know, that come in 4 games, 2 really good ones and 2 poor ones. So they came in and I hadn't had a say on it.
Did you have someone in your head, sorry to interrupt, after Schmeichel that would have been
we tried for Van der Sar, mm-hmm. and we got knocked back. Mm-hmm. So we tried for him before.
Mm-hmm. Was Oliver Kahn an option? I've heard
Not to my knowledge. Okay. It might have been with the manager and people upstairs, but not that I knew of. So goalkeepers come and went, and you know, I just turned to the manager one day and I said, look, I said, can I be the one that goes and finds your goalkeeper? I said, because, you know, and I'm not being disrespectful and I won't name any of them. I said, but, you know, the ones that...
Everyone that you've picked haven't been good enough.
Well, basically,
lazy
to be fair. And people question you and you're saying, mm-hmm. well, I am the goalkeeping coach. I think I should have a say.
Absolutely.
And he was brilliant, the gaffer. He just said, what, you want to do that? He went, I'll leave it to you.
And then you were like, oh, no.
I went, right, and I walked back into the coach's office. What have I done? So he was brilliant. He just said, right, if that's what you want to do, right, done. So my first one then was Tim Howard. So unknown. I'd had contacts in America, this, that, and the other. And then he comes over. We go on tour. He does really well on tour. Then the manager said, he's done really well. He said, I'm going to play him in the Charity Shield. Played him in the Charity Shield, and he starts the season. So that was the first one. Then there was the manager come to me and he said, so the manager and Darren will probably take the credit for Ben Foster coming into the club because Ben was at Wrexham, mm-hmm. and Darren was at Wrexham at the time. The manager just come in and he said, look, Darren's been on about a goalkeeper at Wrexham. I said, right, I'll go and have a look at him. Went, liked him. Needed some work. Next minute, the manager asked me, he said, come on, I'll come with you. We'll go next time. And I'm just talking to him and he's asking me questions. What about this? What about that? Blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, look, starting positions are good. Yeah, it's good there. Hell of a left foot, which he had. Mm-hmm. So it was before all this passing out and playing out from the back. It was like, get it. And he could hit it nearly as far as Maisie's wedge. at golf. Yeah, so that was the start of it. And then obviously the big one was I was pro Van der Sar coming in. And it was only a conversation I had with Dave Besant, the ex-goalkeeper, who was the goalkeeping coach at Fulham, after we played him at Craven Cottage. We were having a drink before coming back. I said, what's he like to work with then, Edwin? Ah, different class. He said, yeah. He said, not a problem. I said, do you think many will come in for him? He said, I don't know. He said, I keep telling the club to get him on a longer contract. He said, because he's got a clause in it. He says, it's only a few million quid to get him out, you know. And I went, oh. So I thought,
bells are ringing.
Come on, Gaffer, let's go. I need to tell you something. So I didn't tell him on the bus to the train station. So we get back to Euston, we get on, we sit down, and I said, right, here's one for you. I said, Van der Sar. He went, what? I went, there's a clause in it. He said, he's 35. I don't care. I said, the goalie coach says he never misses training, he's fit as anything. I said, there's another 4 or 5 years in him yet. Big game experience, mm-hmm. This, everything. I think we should do it. And he went, really? He went, leave it with me. I left it with him. Went on holiday, and always remember, I'm on a bike riding down towards the beach. Phone rang, riding along, got my phone. He said, right. He said, got Van der Sar, he's all done. He said, you'll be working with him next year. Cheers, enjoy your holiday. That was it, that's how it was done.
Wow. Could you believe somebody of Edwin van der Sar's calibre and how good he was as a goalkeeper?
Was at Fulham.
And for so long too, wasn't it?
Because he was phenomenal.
I looked at it, Maisie, I looked at him at Fulham and I thought, what is it that's keeping him at Fulham? Why is nobody trying to take him? Is there a big clause in it? Is it in this?
But it's only until you spoke to Dave Besson that
it was only till he let that slip that we sort of acted on it. And if I looked at him, I thought at the time he was playing for Fulham and he never played for Fulham anywhere near as what he played for us.
No.
But I knew he'd got that big game mentality, that international sort of status of... he'd had a bit of a rough time at Juventus. It didn't go so well for him. And I'm thinking, this might be the swan song for him, so to speak. You know, that he'd take to coming here. This is his environment. This is the arena that he thrives. Just asking around and people in Holland that I knew about him that knew him. And the feedback was that, no disrespect to Fulham, that he was playing within himself really at Fulham because they were never challenging this, that and the other. Not going through the motions. I wouldn't disrespect him that way, but needed the challenge.
I guess a bit like you were saying when you came to United and Peter Schmeichel raised his game because of that challenge. He's not got that challenge at Fulham because his ceiling is so much higher than the players.
So I think at the time there's Mikey Taylor would probably be his number two. The club wasn't as big as what this is, this, that and the other, not in the competitions that we're in. And he needed to be, so he was still a Dutch keeper. He needed to be in European football and big competitions. And luckily it was the right decision for everyone.
Did Sir Alex ever say anything afterwards? Because obviously he was so successful here.
No,
Yes.
He did the foreword in my book, and he mentions it.
Oh, does he?
So I'd never asked him, but he mentions it in it. So obviously then...
That'll do, won't it?
That'll do, yeah.
Talking of your book, I was actually just going to bring that up. You published that 4 years ago, was it now?
It'd be about 16, 17, I think, something like that.
And obviously whenever you're doing the publicity about the book, you're writing articles with newspapers and journalists. And there was one article where you talked about the 2008 Moscow final and that you didn't feel part of it. Just want to ask you a little bit more about that because that would come as quite a surprise. I mean, you'd been here for 10 years, obviously.
I think
it'd come to an end. But when that's Edwin's big moment,
how did
that make you feel when you weren't part of it, as you say?
How do you say no to somebody that's taking your job? Not by default. It wasn't by default, but he was the academy. He's the head goalkeeping coach now. So I'd brought in Richard into the academy as the academy goalkeeping coach. I have to finish because my knee's kaput, and they get through to the final. So
so you'd finished the year before.
So I'd finished. I think it was about the November. I think something like that.
You couldn't train anymore, could you? Because the damage to your knee was so bad, right?
Yeah. So they get through to the which is always the case when something like that happens. I just read it. I knew it was going to happen. And if I remember rightly, don't quote me, did we play Barcelona in the semi-final? Scholes, he scored at this end.
Yeah.
I was stood in the, I was in that, behind that end.
I'd have been behind you. I was behind you.
Was you?
Yeah.
Did you see me? No, you didn't
see
me.
No, I was I was a bit further back. I was in that end.
Not literally behind you, but...
So I was in...
There's a lot of seats there.
I'd literally just bought a ticket and went there. And as soon as it went in, I thought, I'm missing the final as well. Like, you know what I mean? But I'd resign myself to, that's it. And then Richard invited me as his guest to go to the final. And I really wanted to say no. I really, really wanted to say no. And I tried everything. No, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience for your friend. It's, you know, your family, blah, blah, blah. And he said he couldn't because his wife, you know, you've got the young kid and this, that, and the other. And she couldn't be away from work at other times and all this. And I went, well, how about such a body? And I was throwing everything in and I really didn't want to go.
Why is he didn't want to go?
Because of that reason, because I'd left in the November and what was I going to do? So you go in, you're travelling with the friends and family.
Hmm.
I'm on my own.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember sitting there on the morning of the game and I'm having my breakfast and I've seen Scholes' family over there and they're having the, and I'm sat on my own and I'm thinking, I don't want to be here. Hmm. Why am I here? You got to know what it feels like to... Hmm. You know, and I'm thinking, why am I here? This, that, and the other. Right, I'll get through the day and all this. And I thought, well, what am I going to do for the rest of the day? I was on my own and can't go and say, can I join you? Can I tag on with you? You know what I mean? It was just a thing. And then obviously the game goes on, you know what happens. And then the banquet at the end, because of the time difference, I think it started about 4 a.m, didn't it? Something like that. I was just thinking, and then there was a cock up the next day with the planes and we missed our plane and we had to get put onto somebody else's.
I think everybody else was just jumping on planes. Yeah, I've heard that before. Everybody's just finding a spot.
Yeah. Everybody was just, it was a free-for-all like this, and I'm thinking. And I just thought, I shouldn't have come. And I think maybe I've read it or imagine it. I think Roy Keane and Scholes, he said they didn't want the medal after the Barcelona. Because they hadn't played in the final. Mm-hmm. It didn't mean that much to them that way. And I got it because of my experience of feeling that I might have been different as a player, but I just didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I felt like I was gate crashing, really. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it's a strange one. Yeah, so.
But that was a period in your life that really led to quite dark times for you.
Yeah, I didn't want to get out of bed some days. I just I remember when I first had to pack in, the manager saying, right, what about a scouting role for us? And I think I've been in football, you know, since 17 really, but playing football since I was 6-7 years of age. And I thought I knew better and I wanted to step back and just have a breather.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing in my life I did. I should have just kept in it because I stepped back and I was lost. Didn't know what I wanted to do, didn't know the thing, and then some days I didn't want to get out of bed and I was just didn't want to speak to anyone. I was fortunate in the way that I didn't hit the drink or anything like a lot of people do. I don't gamble or things like that, so I didn't spiral into anything that way. You start thinking, are you ever going to get back into football? It's all you've ever known. Are you going to this? And, you know, I couldn't snap myself out of it. So I went and seen somebody and just had a chat with them and just said, look, you know, and they said, talk about your interests, what you do. I like golf and all this. Get yourself out in the fresh air. Don't have people at arm's length. You know, these people that have been close to you, don't just push them away now and all this. And it was... You know, I'd be one-word answers and all the time, not making conversation with people. And my father-in-law just said to me, he said, it's not you. He said, you're normally life and soul. And and then totally out of the blue, I came here. I think you were here, actually, Maisie, on this day. Wendy Renison had us down There was an homeless. You were here, Dennis Irwin, me, Clayton, at Carrington, and it was an homeless competition for the homeless five-a-side or something, and we all had to take a team. Yeah. You remember?
Yeah, yeah.
On that day, on my way here, I got a phone call, and it was somebody in Dubai, and they wanted me to go over and coach in Dubai. And they said, look, it's this amount, it's this, it's that, you get this apartment, blah, 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 and all this. I said, this sounds too good to be true. Mm-hmm. And it was fax machines then. Mm-hmm. I said, fax it through.
We know what that is.
Yeah. Oh, do you?
Yeah. Without to explain.
We cleared that up last week.
We had to show pictures.
Right. So I said, right, and all why these games are going on for this homeless competition, I'm thinking, this is too good to be true, this. Moving to Dubai. I got back. There it was sitting, and I read it. And I'm like, how was that? How does that work out? How much is that against the pound? Blah, 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 and all this. And I'm looking at it. I rang up. I said, right, yeah, I'll do it. So I said to my wife, right, I'm off to Dubai. Have you ever been to Dubai? She said, no, but I'll be out every 6 weeks when the kids are off school. So I went to Dubai, and that really is what picked me up out of it. And it was like a complete, obviously, it's a complete new world out there at that time. I went out there, never ever got to do the job that I was supposed to do. I was supposed to set up this grassroots coaching, but I got there and they had no manager. So while I was there, Sparky come over for an interview. Sam Allardyce, Harry Redknapp, Phil Brown, all come for an interview. Dubai. I think they used it for an holiday, really. Yeah. But so I'm there, and then I end up checking this squad that they decide that there's 35 players going to Austria for pre-season. And I went, how am I going to... Don't know what anywhere anyone plays, don't know what they're like. So 35 players, we have to get an Austrian coach, local coach, to come in to take groups. Like, you know, right, I'll set up the main group, go off and do that with them and this, that, and the other, and the fitness coach. And I just remember sitting down with the sheikh at the time, and I said, listen, there's too many here. This you don't need this many here. But, well, ooh, I'll just send them on. We'll get rid. I said, no, I need a bit of time to have a look. I said, we're going to have some practice matches. I said, but they haven't had enough physical work yet and all this. He said, yeah. You want him to go? I send him now. And it was just completely like that, like, you know. And I thought, oh, blimey. Anyway, then Fabio Cannavaro comes in as the VIP player, like that. So, right, so he comes in. So he's there. And then all of a sudden, I'm doing a session. So I'd been there 10 days. I'm doing a session. I see this entourage walking across the pitch. I'm thinking, you know, who's this? And it was David O'Leary and Roy Aitken. And David O'Leary's accepted the job. I said, right. I'm going to fly back tomorrow then. And he said, no. The lads want you around. He said, you've got to stay with the team. So I ended up staying with the team and not ever doing the job that I went there for. And I stayed there 3 years, and it was just an experience that you'll never, culture change, everything.
I suppose it taught you that you really couldn't live without football.
Yeah, it just come at the right time, Ellen, to be honest. It really did. I don't know where I'd have gone if I hadn't have... two ways, really. I'd probably gone to the pub, or my golf would have improved, and I could have given him a decent game then.
What, drinking our golf?
Either. But it just come at the right time. Mm-hmm. It really did. Now, I'm not saying it happened because I was out helping the homeless, but it's a coincidence. It come on that day that I was giving something back, and I got something. But it was just a chance. I really couldn't. Mm-hmm. Couldn't turn down. It's a chance of going abroad, lovely place to live, tasting a different culture, having a look at their mindset. Very skillful players, but in the head, weak as anything in terms of when it got tough, no fighting spirit, this, that, and the other. They used to give up. And that was what I was trying to instill in them, you know. So it was, it came at the right time.
And we started this conversation talking about your role now then. Did you ever think that day would happen and it would come full circle, I suppose, and you'd end up back here?
I always hoped, always prayed it would. How long it will last is, it will depend on what I bring in, but or what I recommend.
Yeah.
You just mentioned recommendations there. I'm going to ask you for one, but it's not for, well, it can be a goalkeeper if you want, but it's for our podcast. We have had a lot of goalkeepers that have worked alongside you, to be fair. But anybody you would recommend to us?
Oh, to come in?
Doesn't have to be a goalkeeper, but obviously you know them better.
Is this over the phone or coming in into the studio?
Yeah, yes. We'll just do what we can.
Because it depends on where they are, doesn't it?
If they, if they're global.
Well, it depends where it is, because hold it back, because if it's a decent trip, we might be able to.
Once the borders are open. Near a golf course, by the way.
Yeah. Anyone in Dubai that's, you know, you can recommend or anything like that?
Let me think. Goalkeeping-wise, Ben Foster's always good for an interview. Always good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's doing quite a lot of media work. He's got a YouTube channel, hasn't he?
A lot of cycling.
Yeah, he has a pro go in the goals as well, doesn't he? Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll go for Ben Foster. Tony, thank you so much for chatting to us. It's been fascinating.
Pleasure.
Cheers, TC.
No problem. Pleasure.
Well, that was fascinating, wasn't it?
Very good. Very, very good. Great in-depth into his career and great story.
A really good talker. Didn't have to do anything on this one.
Imagine playing at 14 as a pub goalkeeper.
Fighting people because they take, what they take is steak? Is lamb?
It's pork chop.
That's it, pork chop. Not great at my meats.
Clearly.
No. Yeah, that's one thing you don't want to do is nick his pork chop because...
You'll go down.
You will.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Was he an aggressive person when you remember him?
No, but he was always one of those that you would stand by if there was any little fracas going on or anything like that.
Any what?
Fracas. Hmm. Yeah.
Good word. Also, I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. His mate who split his lip and phoned him and said, "I'm going to give you stitches tomorrow."
Mick Harford.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's nice, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you have done that if you were playing against someone you knew and you liked and were friends with? Would you try and kick him?
Yeah.
Or elbow him?
Yeah, but I would try and kick him, but I certainly wouldn't ring him up the night before and say,
"Threaten him.
Split your lip." Yeah. Yeah. Happened in my first real game at United. It was a Charity Shield against Blackburn. And I played right back against Jason Wilcox.
Yeah.
And all I wanted to do was launch him. So, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Did you get him?
I'm sure if I did. Oh. I hope I did. But yeah, great podcast.
Really
good. I can't believe we didn't bring up the bedtime stories.
Yeah, we dropped a ball on that one. That was a shame.
Sorry, mate.
But we did get him telling some great stories about how Van der Sar got to the club, which was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think we've got some good advice for people that are listening that would be interested or might be thinking, "Oh, I hope I get scouted one day." Now they know.
Tasker.
Just do it simple. Play sensibly. Simon. Keep hold of the ball. Knock it round neatly.
Outfield though, goalkeeper.
Yeah, don't get carried away.
We've seen you two perform at the hotel football.
Yeah.
And just keep working at your game, lads. That's all I can say.
Thank you.
Task, if you grow another 6, 7, 8 inches, you might be able to become to 6'6".
Yeah. Yeah, loved it. Shall we have a look at some messages? Although, obviously, you two now get your messages in person.
Well, true.
Because we're divas.
Okay, I'll go first. Zach Hatzis. G'day. Amazing.
G'day, mate. You little ripper.
He's from Australia, funnily enough.
All right.
My boss and I are huge fans of the show. Please give a shout out to Rudy so he has little choice but to give me a promotion.
Yes, Rudy. Give him a promotion, pal.
Rudy, 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 Rudy.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, that was nice.
As a young fan of Manchester United, I can't thank you all enough for providing such a unique platform for me to expand my knowledge of the club's history. It is incredible to hear from United players of the past. Their hilarious stories and love for the badge exemplify exactly what it takes to play for the biggest club in the world. It would be awesome if you could get Fred on the show. I would love to hear about the challenges he faced when making the leap from Donetsk to Manchester. Keep up the great work, Zach. He also says, I might add, Helen, please make sure Sam and Maisie know they are your co-hosts.
Right, Zach, I was about to say, Rudy, you have to give him a promotion because of Maisie's brilliant shout out.
Excuse me, that was mine, actually.
It was. Don't start taking all our glory, you. He does all the time.
You did the singing.
Yeah.
I did.
She set me up.
Yeah, I just...
You just sit there and just go through your phone.
I've written emails.
Do your job, which is nothing.
I just went, Rudy, 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 Rudy.
Yeah, of course you did.
Thank you.
Sorry. I got...
Samuel.
My hard work always
Samuel,
goes
if you have nothing constructive to say, don't say it.
I was complimenting you.
Well, compliment my co-host.
Helen, you're her co-host, I think. Helen, excellent. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you,
Rudy. Well done, Bells.
Rudy, give Zach a promotion. I think that's what we're trying to get out of this.
Yes.
So this was the last podcast. This is where it all went wrong. Zohab Anwar says, hi guys, my name is Zohab. I am from Pakistan, currently living in Vancouver, Canada. I have been really enjoying all of the episodes with United Legends every Monday morning here in Vancouver, Canada. I look forward to start my work day with a new podcast episode plugged in. Even though every single episode has been amazing, I particularly enjoyed two episodes that Skullsies, brackets, Sam's BFF, correct, and Bruno Fernandes recently. I started watching United in the early 2000s and immediately was struck by Skullsies' ability to control the football match. He is my all-time favourite player and the player I miss the most in the post-Sir Alex Ferguson era. I have to be honest that Bruno has helped me in missing Skullsies less in each game. Bruno epitomises everything I look for in a United player. Hard work, passion, desire to win, talent, and a larger-than-life aura. I think it's so fitting that Bruno now wears the number 18 and that Bruno's podcast episode was released on Skullsies' birthday. Absolutely loved it. Not Mr. Trickett. I have a quick request for you, René Mullenstein. I think he speaks so well and would be great to hear from his perspective about the period from 2007 to 2013, one of the most competitive squads United had when he first was a first team coach. Best wishes. Zohab, brilliant email. Thank you very much. Also, pretty jealous that you're in Vancouver because that place is nice.
René. Need to get peen on the kiss.
Yeah, she can sort that out, can she?
Yep.
Thank you very much for your messages, as always. And thank you very much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us unitedpodcast@mainunited.co.uk. That address is in the show notes. That's it from us this time. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.